Good morning. Welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there. You can also download the podcast later and listen at your leisure. You've got Julian Paul here live in the studio as usual. Later in this hour, we'll be talking to our PG.
Hopefully.
Sadly, no Ogo Osamor this week. He's normally our guest speaker every second Saturday of the month. But all being well, next week and indeed every third Saturday of the month, Gareth Morgan will be joining us. He's a member of and also ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society. You can always check them out on Facebook as well and Instagram. They're very active there. So what's in the science news this week then? Well, first up, new electric vehicle sales reached a record high last month, accounting for 30% of all new car registrations. New Automotive noted that 64,400 new electric cars sold last month marked the first time sales had crossed the 30% level.
Right, the government has announced £47 million in funding to restore England's peatlands, 80% of which are in a dry and degraded state. The government has set a target of restoring 280,000 hectares of peatland by 2050.
And a rather interesting one, this, because I can speak a few languages. Those who can speak four languages have brains that appear 13 years younger compared with people who have command of only one language. Being multilingual has been linked to slower aging of the brain after researchers found that those who spoke two languages had brains that appeared 6 years younger, and those who spoke three had brains that appeared 7 years younger. But if you speak four languages, apparently you have brains that appear 13 years younger.
The once-a-day Wegovy weight loss pill, which is W-E-G-O-V-Y, weight loss pill, is now available to buy privately from high street and online pharmacies in the UK, but it is not yet on the NHS. It contains the same ingredient, semaglutide, as the Wegovy weight loss injections, but is still advised to be used alongside a healthy diet and increased physical activity.
And therein lies the punchline, I guess. It's still advised to be used alongside a healthy diet and increased physical activity. There's lots of information in the press at the minute about all sorts of side issues being created by these weight loss jabs and now, well, pills. With the pills, people are more likely to use them if they can afford them, I guess. The government has announced that, like, this is a rather interesting one as well. The government has announced that life-saving allergy pens, also known as EpiPens, which are basically auto-adrenaline injectors, must be stored in all schools in England from September this year, following a campaign by the parents of a five-year-old boy who died after drinking cow's milk. Under Benedict's law, schools will also need to have a whole school allergy policy, provide training to all staff and ensure individual healthcare plans for pupils with allergies are in place. Benedict Blythe died after an accidental exposure to an allergen, cow's milk protein, while at Barnet Primary School, which is between Stamford and Peterborough, and that was back in December 2021. Next up, apologies for the noise outside, but it is rather warm in the studio today. And it has been all week, to be fair. Next up, we're going to talk all about butterflies, because it is coming up to the big butterfly count, which starts next Friday. But I saw this article in the Royal Horticultural Society July magazine, and it's all about a project called Project Psyche, and it's a butterfly study. And the person leading the study is called Dr. Charlotte Wright, and she's co-leader of the butterfly study Project Psyche at the Wellcome Sanger Institute in Cambridge. So she says, we're building a DNA library for all 11,665 European species of butterflies and moths for scientists anywhere in the world to freely use. It's a 10-year international project named Project Psyche after the Greek goddess of the soul, who was frequently depicted with butterfly wings and renowned for her beauty. So a staggering 80% of UK butterflies have declined since the 1970s. These insects play a vital role in nutrient recycling, plant pollination, and as food for bats and birds. By comparing the genomes of species that have disappeared, are declining, or are stable, or are even growing, we can understand how environmental changes might affect everything from insect diversity to food security. So Dr. Charlotte Wright says we've captured more than 1,000 species DNA so far, including almost all UK butterflies. Genome sequencing can reveal all sorts A project in 2022 discovered a wax moth enzyme could degrade plastic. Now, by analysing the DNA for all its related species, we can investigate how that protein varies and how to use it. She says everyone can help by contributing to monitoring data. When you spot a butterfly or moth, just log it on iNaturalist or iRecord and join in with a big butterfly count, which starts next Friday and runs until the 9th of August. She says your findings are then available for scientists to compare with genomic data and understand changes in biodiversity. You can check out Project Psych, www.projectpsych, all one word, project, and then psyche.org. So that's Dr. Charlotte Wright from the Wellcome Sanger Institute in Cambridge. I thought that was fantastic. And we will be reminding you as well in the coming weeks about the butterfly count.
Yes, so the annual UK Big Butterfly Count starts next Friday, 17th of July, until Sunday, the 9th of August, 2026. I know Friday, 17th of July is when the prom starts as well.
It is.
Help assess the health of our environment by counting the amount and type of butterflies and day flying moths you see in a 15-minute period. So it's www.bigbutterflycount.org. Seen quite a few yesterday too.
Yeah, I think the weather's suiting them because it's dry and hot. Not suiting some of the garden though, I'm afraid.
Or us.
No. So, and finally on the butterfly front, did you know that a bumblebee that has just eaten something sweet behaves much as any satisfied human dynamite by licking its lips? Scientists say the gesture suggests that insects show different emotion-like responses to taste depending on whether they have consumed something pleasant or unpleasant. The researchers believe this may point to insects having a richer mental world than is often assumed.
Ride with me, take my hand, baby, please, time to shine. You and I, in the night, let me see a butterfly. Hold me tight, take your time, say my name. No rest now, slow it down, make it last. Let me see a butterfly. Ride with me, take my hand, baby, please, time to shine. You and I, in the night, let me see a butterfly. Hold me tight, take your time, say my name. No rest now, slow it down, make it last. Let me see a butterfly. 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 Blah, blah, blah.
Fantastic track, that yeah. RPG sent that in last year. It was one of his new releases, Butterfly by Mainline Magic Orchestra. Loving that. Love think it. It might appear on Soul Plus, actually. I think it came in for Glory Days, not sure. But we played that because we were talking about Project Psyche, Butterflies today. We also talk about the fact that the annual Big Butterfly Count starts next Friday, the 17th of July, and continues until the 9th of August, which is a Sunday. BigButterflyCount.org. Take part if you can. You're, of course, listening to Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning from 11 until 12. Next, there was a cracking article from Paul Simons in the Weather Eye. He writes for The Times, does some amazing stuff. This article's about artificial intelligence brings clearer spells of weather forecasting, she says. But I've picked up the wrong article. Oh. Just hang on a minute while I rummage. Go on, Paul, you'll have to do some talking.
Ah.
Ah, this is live radio for you, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, you go.
Come on then, Paul. Can we talk about the weather? She's back. Yeah, we got there in the end. This article wasn't by Paul Simons. It's by Ben Cook from The Times, still the same sort of thing. But AI brings clearer spells of weather forecasting. I thought this was an interesting one. A week before the temperatures soared to a record-breaking 35 degrees on Bank Holiday Monday last month. Well, that must be basically the May one, because this was written in June. Forecast gave barely a hint that heat wave was on the horizon. At its headquarters in Reading, the European Centre for Medium Range Weather Forecast, or ECMWF, I never knew such thing existed, was predicting temperatures in the low 20s across much of England. This was before the previous heat wave we have. So in Redwood City, California, however, the startup Windborne system predicted temperatures of about 30 degrees Celsius. As temperatures stirred on the bank holiday, households across Kent found their taps were running dry. Southeast Water blamed the outages on high usage during the heat. Locals told The Times, however, that they would have reduced their usage beforehand if the company had warned of the heat wave. So Kai Marshland, Windborne's chief product officer, said the water outages were an example of the many problems the world could solve with better weather forecasts. June, the company founded by Marshland with three fellow Stanford graduates in 2019 released a new version of its forecast AI weather mesh. So Marshland said that its warnings were accurate up to 4 days before the European Centre for Medium Range Weather Forecast based in Reading. There's a new opportunity here, he said. The release of the model to Windborne's clients included the US Air Force, but not the general public. It's a milestone for a company that began as a student project. Its founders set out in 2015 to design more durable weather balloons. Every day around the world, meteorologists launch about 1,000 weather balloons to measure wind speed and temperatures. Most last a few hours before popping, meaning that swathes of the planet are unobserved. So Kai Marshland, who's 29 years old, said that Windborne launched a balloon last year that has been in the air longer than my nephew has been alive. The startup now has nearly 500 balloons in the air and a data sharing contract with the US National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The company's mission now is to feed the improved data into its AI model to predict the weather patterns. Historically, meteorologists have devised their forecast by using supercomputers to simulate the behaviour of the atmosphere. In recent years, however, so-called physics-based models have faced competition from artificial intelligence-based models, which sort through historical weather data to identify patterns. By seeing how weather systems have developed in the past, they guess how they will develop in the future. And now Paris Perdicaris, very interesting name, a maths professor at Pennsylvania University, said that he expects most weather forecasts to be AI generated in the next 2 years. Wimborne now plans to create a planetary nervous system of 10,000 balloons to improve weather forecasts. So Kai Marshland said better predictions could help humanity through warnings of bushfires or identify tailwinds to reduce flight times for aircraft. The company is working with the Gates Foundation to help farmers in sub-Saharan Africa predict when the life-giving rains will come. The Met Office is also testing artificial intelligence. Edward Steele, a fellow for data science, said we see the future as being a mix of physics-based and AI-based weather models to deliver the benefits of both. Very interesting, eh? Great track there by Magazine about the weather, because we're talking about artificial intelligence brings clearer spells of weather forecasting. It all came from Californian startup, Windborne Systems, with an AI forecasting tool called Weather Mesh. All interesting stuff, eh? Listen to Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms. Every Saturday from 11 until 12. Next up, a very interesting story in the press. It was in the press last week, actually. Eye and hearing tests could catch dementia early. This was a report by Ben Spencer, science editor for The Times. I thought it was very interesting, given the amount of dementia about these days. Hearing tests and eye checks could soon be used to flag the early signs of dementia, giving a quicker diagnosis and earlier access to drugs to slow the disease. It typically takes 3.5 years for somebody with dementia to receive a diagnosis, and can be even slower for those who went to university or are better at masking their symptoms. How interesting. By scanning the back of the eye using standard equipment, or assessing how well people can differentiate sounds, for example, telling apart running water from a rumble of thunder, scientists believe diagnosis can be vastly improved. Experts say the test could be adopted by NHS memory clinics to improve diagnosis, or used by optometrists and audiologists as an extra test during routine checks on your eyes and your hearing. At present, people are usually diagnosed using memory tests and questions. Finding new ways to diagnose dementia will be a key focus, or was a key focus, of the Alzheimer's Association International Conference in London last week, or I think it was actually this week. 1 million people in the UK are thought to have dementia, but a third never receive a diagnosis. The Alzheimer's Society said urgent change was needed, and that without a detailed diagnosis, patients would miss out on new groundbreaking drugs. Neurologists believe these drugs, which clear toxic proteins such as amyloid and TAU, will be most effective if they are given early in the course of the disease before lasting damage is done. Early diagnosis of dementia is therefore vital. Research by Chris Hardy of the University College London, published in May in the Alzheimer's and Dementia Journal, confirmed that it was harder for those with dementia to differentiate competing noises. His test works by playing one sound, such as running water, in the left ear, and another, such as thunder, in the right. The patient points at pictures to identify the two sounds. At City St George's University of London, scientists have found that abnormalities in the blood vessels in the retina correlate closely with dementia. They are assessing hundreds of thousands of eye scans stored in the UK biobank to see whether AI can pick up the changes before symptoms appear. Really interesting research going on there. Eye tests and hearing tests could catch dementia earlier.
I'm trying to get it over to you.
something's going on in my head from Status Quo back in 71, my words. And we played that because we were talking about eye tests and hearing tests could be used to catch dementia early. All interesting stuff. You listen to Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Next up, before we speak to RPG, another little article that was in the Royal Horticultural Society July magazine. It's all about greener gardening. So the first tip it gives, create amphibian shelters, grow low plants and leave grass long around pond edges to create safe retreats and easy access for frogs, toads and newts. Elsewhere, work slowly, taking extra care when mowing or strimming to let amphibians disperse. Next one is brew homemade feed. So it says that cut and pack comfrey or nettles into a lidded container. Cover with water and let it rot down until dark in colour. Strain, compost the residue and dilute the liquid to a weak tea colour before using on plants. All good stuff. Don't bother going to buy anything, basically. Another one, make wildlife highways. Create small gaps between fences so amphibians and hedgehogs can move freely between gardens. Speak with neighbours to link habitats and support safer wildlife corridors throughout your street. Sadly, hedgehogs seem to be few and far between these days, to be fair. Another one is grow for moths. Add night-scented nectar-rich flowers such as evening primrose or sweet rocket for feeding moths. Grow foxgloves and fuchsias for larvae to feed on and maintain undisturbed areas with long grass for shelter. And the final tip is plant for bees. Plentiful midsummer blooms will feed large active colonies. Lavenders, catmint, echinacea, pentstemons, escalonia and blackberries provide nectar and pollen for bees during their peak foraging period. So a few top tips from the RHS for greener gardening.
In a flower bed.
super track there from Susie and the Banshees. What a band, eh? Green Fingers. And we played that because we're talking about the RHS July magazine and the article about tips for greener gardening. Of course, you listen to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital, if in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning at 11 till 12. All being well, we should have RPG on the line. Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
Yes, it's worked. We weren't quite sure.
Where you were going to come
from.
Yeah,
the desk has been odd. Well, behaving quite oddly. Maybe it's the heat, Paul. Maybe it's just had enough.
Yes, yeah, well, it's affecting a lot of things, isn't it, heat? So.
Yes. I think it's even affecting traffic lights, which it does, because it chips overheat and things.
Yep, yeah, it's... amazing what a bit of heat does, isn't it?
It is. So what's caught your eye in the news this week, science news this week, then, Paul?
Well, on a local front, something from Sheffield University again. And scientists there have been looking at some fungi, and they've uncovered how particular fungi blind the immune system. And they say that that offers a new hope against superbugs. So I found that quite interesting. Researchers have discovered that a fungus which is deadly to people with weakened immune systems can also disable a critical defence used by neutrophils, the body's frontline infection-fighting white blood cells. So they're at Sheffield's Beatson Centre for Disease Mechanisms, and they've discovered that Candida albicans fungus can disable white blood cells. An estimated 40 to 60% of healthy people carry Candida albicans harmlessly, but it can be deadly for people with weakened immune systems. So the findings may pave a way to new therapies to tackle life-threatening fungal infections and rising antifungal resistance. So I said that they discovered the fungus, and they think that it can be used for the development of new sort of treatments. So people with weakened immune systems, this particular thing can enter the bloodstream and trigger an invasive candidiasis. And it's a condition with mortality rates approaching 50%.
Ooh.
So it's quite a sort of a difficult thing to cope with. But again, it's like the superbugs that are developing in hospitals and environments where things are sort of allowed to grow and develop, not necessarily under control or with a real reason to understand them. But this research they conducted out using zebrafish models and human immune systems, human immune cells, and they showed that restoring the suppressed immune response dramatically improves survival from infection, particularly when it's combined with existing antifungal drugs. So Candida was found to actively suppress production of reactive nitrogen species, which is RNS. They're toxic molecules normally used by neutrophils, that's our white blood cells, to kill invading microbes. And remarkably, the fungus reduced these protective molecules to levels below normal baseline activity, which effectively damps the immune response during the infection. So it's a way of controlling disease that's developed, and the work continues. Dr. Philip Elks, senior lecturer at the University of Sheffield School of Medicine and Population Health, and co-director of the Beatson Centre for Disease Mechanisms, said Candida infection can be lethal for patients with compromised immune systems, and the global increase in antifungal resistance, excuse me, along with limited treatment options, is of immense concern. So although it's in its early stages, the findings indicate that they could help patients fight off fungal infections by strengthening their immune systems, protecting vulnerable people from deadly outcome of the fungal infections. So I thought that's another bit of good work carried on by University of Sheffield.
Yeah, doing some great stuff, aren't they?
They seem to be, and they're very good at communicating that out and about, so let people know what goes on, because they can be cloistered institutions, the universities, so hopefully with things like our show, letting people see the kind of work that they're doing, sort of gives people a bit of an insight into what can be happening around.
And it's quite a diverse range of research they do as a university, because they've got so many different faculties, haven't they?
Yeah, well, they are one of the sort of outstanding universities in the country, and they've got a broad range of things. We've seen how they're involved a lot with sort of future technical solutions to lots of problems. So they've been involved with airline fuel development to reduce pollution, and we see them sort of communicating with the local industry as well, so it seems like it's a good foundation and sort of a well worthwhile addition to their sort of local inputs. So Sheffield University, that's one of the things that caught my attention, but I guess the other thing which you can't avoid these days,
football. No.
Well, it kind of all comes together,
tennis,
doesn't it? So we've got reports of these horrible wildfires in Spain, and that's part of the European sort of heat dome, which is increasing temperatures across Europe. That's including us. I think that the flags are being raised for an American heat dome, which could sort of affect things tonight, because there's a warning on the England match of possible thunderstorms again, which may sort of cause delays or changes. But I'm sort of looking on the NHS, and they've got a section which deals with heat exhaustion and heat stroke. So heat exhaustion doesn't usually need emergency medical response, as long as you can cool the person suffering from it down within about 30 minutes. But if it does turn to heat stroke, it needs to be treated as an emergency. So they give a list of symptoms for heat exhaustion and heat stroke. They say the symptoms of heat exhaustion include tiredness. Well, yeah, I guess we're all suffering a bit of that with not sleeping well. Dizziness, headache, feeling sick, nausea, or being sick, actually vomiting. Excessive sweating and skin becoming pale and clammy. A change in your skin colour. And they say that could be harder to see on brown or black skin. Cramps in your arms, legs and stomach. A high temperature. Being very thirsty and feeling irritable.
Sounds like a normal day, that, Paul.
Yeah, I think it's it. But they say the symptoms of heat exhaustion are often the same in adults and children. And if someone's showing signs of heat exhaustion, they need to be cooled down and given fluids. Now, for the symptoms of heat stroke, they include a very high temperature, hot skin without sweating, fast breathing and a fast heartbeat, confusion and restlessness, a seizure or possibly fits, and a loss of consciousness. So heat stroke is, they say, a medical emergency, and to get immediate medical help if someone has the symptoms of heat stroke. So what can you do to cool somebody down? So if you think someone's got heat exhaustion, there are four steps they offer. Move them to a cool place, which seems sensible, but it's not always on top of your mind when you're dealing with somebody in trouble. Remove all unnecessary clothing like a jacket or socks. That's right, okay. Give them plenty of water to drink. And you can also give them an isotonic sports drink or oral rehydration powder that you mix with water. And that'll help to replace the salts that are lost through sweating. And also they say to cool their skin. Spray or sponge them with cool water and fan them. If you can get cold packs wrapped in a cloth and put them under the armpits or on the neck, that's a good too. And stay by their side until they're feeling better. So don't leave people where they could drift back into the problem areas. You should, if you're not actually sort of getting worse, feel better within about 30 minutes. And they say get help from NHS 111 if you or someone else have symptoms of heat exhaustion that you're struggling to treat or you need advice about. And they say you can call 111 and get help from the line. But to call 999 if you or someone else have signs of heat stroke, including still being unwell after that 30 minutes of resting in a cool place and cooling down and drinking fluids. If you've still got a high temperature, a very high temperature, a hot skin that's not sweating, and it might look red. This can be harder to see, as they say, in brown and black skin. But the faster heartbeat, fast breathing or shortness of breath, confusion and lack of coordination, and signs of a seizure or a fit and loss of unconsciousness. It says, if you're suffering, don't try and drive yourself to A&E. call on 999 and they should give you advice on what to do. So what can you do while you're waiting for help? So they say wrap the person who's suffering in a cool, wet sheet or fan them or sponge them down with cold water while you wait for help to arrive. If they do lose consciousness while you're waiting for help, put them in the recovery position and tell the ambulance service. Check the breathing and pulse and carry out CPR if there's no sign of life. So that's getting to the serious side of it. And recovery position is where you put people onto their side, pull their arm across so it opens up their airways so they can breathe a bit better. And I say just be aware of any changes while you're trying to deal with it. They say that there's a high risk of heat exhaustion, heat stroke during this kind of weather, or if you exercise over much in this weather. So moderation in a lot of things. It says drink more cold drinks, especially if you're active or exercising, but it's not advisable for the cold drinks to be alcohol. Wear some light-coloured loose clothing. So if you've got your desert robes, you can pop those on and walk about. Avoid the sun between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. when it's the highest in the sky. And avoid extreme exercise. So if you're a fit person and you're jogging around, take it easy. It's not a time for extreme exercise. And if you're inside on a very hot day, close your curtains, close the windows if it's hotter outside than in your home, and turn off any electric equipment and lights that could be contributing to heat. This will also help to prevent dehydration and help your body to keep itself cool. And they say particularly check on children, older people, and people with long-term health conditions such as diabetes or heart problems, as they're more at risk from heat exhaustion and heat stroke. So it's quite a difficult sort of time, and I think that if you are going out in the sun, don't forget about a high factor sun protection, and especially on children, if they're out playing, they can suddenly be overtaken by the heat, and they're not quite as good at stopping careering around and doing a lot of chaotic exercise. It's kind of keep an eye out for your neighbours, your friends and your loved ones, and possibly get yourself, as they say, some isotonic sports drinks or at least access to some cool water. And try and keep people cool by using wet sheets or cloths, use fans. And again, it depends these days. I think the old folding fans haven't been around as much for some years. So it's more likely to be one of these USB fans that you can clip around your neck, or hats with a fan built in. it's amazing that we're really going to suffer from it, but it really is going to be, I think, one of those times where we're increasingly going to have this heat dome creation, which keeps the temperature rising within the heat dome. You don't get the air circulation through to change the temperatures. And when it comes with an increasingly cold front, when it gets towards the dome, then we can have storm conditions. So at the moment, there's a big storm, a typhoon brewing, I think, across in the east. That's the thing. And so America's under a warning for a large dome across America. So if you're the England team, you probably appreciate then the hydration breaks that they've built into the games, which have had a bit of a checkered reception from a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, Wimbledon, I mean, they're playing in extreme temperatures for hours and hours. In Tour de France, they've always cycled ridiculous distances for like 3 weeks in incredibly high temperatures.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think quite often with that, you'll see that on Tour de France, they'll be passing places and people actually throw water on them and throw them drinks so they can hydrate as they're going along. And that sort of helps them because they don't want to carry it with them. So that will work for a lot of those.
I think some of the team cars have been passing them ice and they've been putting it down the backs. But, you know, you do question in the climate we've gotten, it's ever changing, whether or not they'll have to do it at a different time of year. I mean, it's July. Wimbledon's July, you know. The Tour de France is July.
I think it's sort of harking back to more temperate summers, isn't
it? Oh, yeah, yeah, when it was freezing.
So you sort of got to acknowledge the change, and I think maybe some of the doubters now will start to realise that global warming is a reality. A lot of the predictions say that we will have a regular cycle like this for quite some time.
Mm.
Again, some of the work that's going on in science to try and change things. I mean, I was watching a piece on TV with the people who were supplying heat pumps, saying that all of a sudden it went from sort of 5 installations to more than 15 and 20 installations. And a lot of people sort of wondering about that, and also some feedback from the new kind of buildings that are more airtight. It's very, very difficult to cool them down.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, there's a thing with if you're finding the temperature outside is cooling down, then make sure that if you're going to open windows, open on the cooler side of the house to let in cooler air, not on the side that's still warm, which again could increase your internal temperatures and sort of contribute to the discomfort that you get at the very least.
Well, we've not cycled. We didn't cycle last week. We haven't cycled Monday. We haven't cycled today, just for the exact reason of, you know, it's just too hot. You got a cycle helmet on as well. But on that, when you talked about how to, you know, cool people down, you say about put cold water on them. Well, I'll just tell you a story about when I was a bit younger and a bit more foolish, Paul. But I was quite fit at the time. But we used to do a lot of activity holidays, which generally used to be in hot countries like Turkey, Croatia. Sailing's fine because you're on the water, but we also used to do a lot of mountain biking. And we went out on this one ride. Set off it early in the morning because it was a hard ride and they wanted to do it before it got too hot. It was 40 degrees nearly. And on the way back, I started experiencing, you know, I'd gone quiet, which is always a sign that I'm not well, Paul. And, you know, because I used to say hello to everyone cycling along. And I just got to a point where the guy who was leading the ride said, right, I think you've got heat stroke or whatever. We stopped at this farm and he just got this hose pipe and he just hosed me down. But you know, even though I must have been boiling hot because the water in the hose pipe, because the hose pipe had been on the floor, it was like a farmyard. So it was warm, but as soon as that water hit me, I nearly passed out because the differential in how hot I was compared to even the water was warm. So I think if somebody had to put cold water on me, I'd have just been unconscious. It was an awful feeling. And Paul, I had this new white top on and was laid in what was a farmyard. Clearly the top never survived it, but I got taken back to the hotel in a broom wagon. I got in the shower with all my clothes on in freezing cold water, went to bed and had an ice cream and that were it. And never cycled really again after that in that sort of extreme things. So it does make you, you know, your body can only do so much, can't it?
Well, I think that's why I touched on it, is that the actually differentiating between the heat exhaustion and heat stroke. I think when heat exhaustion, you feel tired and you know, it slows you down, you feel hot and bothered, but you still pretty much together mentally in terms of what you're doing. Whereas when you've got a heat stroke, it becomes a medical emergency, as it says. The change then is to still try and cool people very quickly. And I think that one of the things that I've sort of seen going the rounds today is about using things like aluminium foil to blank out windows in your house and reflect the heat away from your house, because I know when it gets warm here, I've got a Velux window in the attic, and that can really, I mean, you can cook your dinner up there.
You could, you could grow tomatoes, couldn't you?
Because
heat rises, doesn't it, Paul? So it's going to be hot there anyway.
Yeah, it does. But I say, if you can reflect that heat away from the sort of glass areas, so that's just the normal sort of cooking foil, kitchen foil that you have, and try and use that to block out some of the heat. One of the other things is to use the emergency blankets that you can get these days, which are a big sort of sheet of a reflective foil, which you can use. And say, if you've got windows on the hot side, you can use the foil to reflect the heat away from that and try and just keep that temperature under control a bit. But I think that the predictions from science say that we're going to have to get used to more cycles of this extreme.
We were saying as well, you know, I know the forecast temperatures are to drop, but your house retains that heat. The bricks retain it. The tarmac retains it. It just doesn't suddenly cool down, does it?
No. It's, let's say, I think a lot of the time it's actually becoming aware of these things and trying to control temperature. And again, I think on TV there was a thing about a lot of people are being persuaded to buy these air conditioning mobile units, which they say will cool a complete room down in 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Which is rubbish. I think you've got to be very wary. I mean, I think the studio, we have some air conditioning, and you could certainly tell the difference when that's not working in a building where our building is sort of like a tin can sat on top of an old building, isn't it?
It is.
Which which and makes it quite
difficult. I know, and on that note, Paul, you've chosen a great track to play out on. It wasn't your first choice, but it's still good nonetheless. It's Kiss with Hotter Than Hell.
It certainly is.
Blimey, Paul, brilliant. Brilliant. Stay cool, Paul.
Right, thank you, Paul.
Yeah, and you guys.
And we'll speak to you Monday, Glory Days Rock Show, 1 until 3.
Bye-bye.
Look forward to
bye-bye,
it.
Bye-bye, Paul. Bye. Cheers.
Bye. Bye-bye. Bye. We'll be right back.